Today on First Lady and Friends, I had the most inspiring conversation with Heather Van Boren. She was a woman who had a terrible accident, had her legs amputated, and a year out, she sits down and has an amazing conversation about how she's doing now and all the miracles that have happened since the accident. Can't wait for you to take a listen. Let's get proximate. We are back here on First Lady and Friends. I've got a guest today that I just met. And I've looked at your story and just been so intrigued, as I think many people have. This is Heather Van Boren, and you have just an incredible story, and you've experienced some things that I think have changed everything, I think, for you. So let's before we get too much into it, tell me a little bit about you. You're a mom.
Yes.
And but where did you start? Where did you grow up? Tell me a little bit about your family of origin and those kinds of things.
Yes. So I grew up in Utah, born and raised, Salt Lake, and as well, my husband did as well. And we dated in college and got married. We both went to the University of Utah, got married, and then we ended up going away, living out of state for about 12 years. And
where did you live?
We lived in Tucson, Arizona, while my husband went did his residency, and then we moved to Sacramento, California, for a fellowship, and decided to stay there. And then when my oldest two were just getting just close to junior high, I said, we need to go back to Salt Lake. And so here we are.
That's so fantastic. How many children do you have?
I have five children. My oldest is 28 and my youngest is 14. So it seems like there's a bit of a spread, but actually my olders are quite close in age. And then we had an 8-year gap and then my youngest 14-year-old.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's fun.
That is so fun. What are some other things that you do? You were an athlete, so tell me a little bit about that.
Well, we're super active, our whole family. I grew up active. My siblings, they're all very active. A lot of them are runners, climbing, hiking, biking. And then once Don and I had children, we wanted to be very active as well. And so we did everything outside, skiing. We loved to be outdoors and quite adventurous as well. We laugh that we feel like we've had a lot of life and death near experiences, but really we've just had some really fun experiences in our lives. And we make a point to try to include the whole family in those experiences. So it's always been very important to us to be outside and sharing nature. We love nature. Mm.
So did you do sports or just mostly outdoor recreation type sports out, you know, during high school and when you were younger and stuff like that?
When I was in growing up, I mostly did dance. And then as I got into high school, I did sports outside, not team sports. But as I've noticed now with my girls, they can kind of decide to do anything. But when I was growing up, it was kind of we did dance and that was it. So I was thrilled to kind of get that opportunity to be a tomboy when I got married, and because my husband loved doing outdoorsy things. And so we just really thought, okay, the sky's the limit and let's just go for it. And so, yeah.
Isn't that fun? I think back and, you know, I played sports in high school, but I remember like thinking, you know, when I became a mom, I'm like, well, you know, moms don't go play basketball like guys do.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes when you're a little bit older, like my sisters and I would play volleyball together, you know, and the kids would run around on the other side of the gym or something, but it's a little tricky. But I started running because I didn't need anybody else or any equipment or
anything like that. And I'm like, I just need my shoes and I just got to go. And so,
yes. So. And I loved running for that reason. As a mom of, four young kids, and I was often a single mom, probably a lot like you, yeah. I would imagine. I knew that was something I could always do. And living in Utah, I loved the seasons. That was what I missed the most living away. And so I would say I would run rain, snow, winter, spring, summer, fall. I loved it all. And so I think there were years and years where I really didn't miss, I probably ran about 3 or 4 times a week.
Yeah. Yeah. And for mental health too, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I love that. And then as I kind of got older, my kids were in school, I took up tennis. And I loved that for mental health. I made some wonderful friends and I got to go and enjoy some activity. And it was just a really great place for me to kind of have my own little life aside from my family. And yeah.
That's so great. And I love it that, you know, I think people have them, especially, you know, moms of small children. I think it's you're up to your eyeballs sometimes, yeah. And it's so hard. And I just thought, well, this will never end. But I have really enjoyed finding times to play different sports, learn different sports. I mean, I too have picked up tennis a little bit. I mean, not just, yeah. just with friends, you know, family and whatnot, but golf. I mean, I've learned to golf and, you know, as an adult, I mean, I never golfed as a kid. I think people think, you know, when you have little kids, your life is over and that stuff's in the past. And, you know, I love to give new parents, you know, the hope that, you know, you will have a semblance of your own life again.
Yes, the day will come where you get to kind of choose what you want to do. And yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so great. And do your kids all sort of live around here too? Your older ones and stuff?
Yes. My daughter that runs kind of our Instagram account, so a lot of people are familiar with her. She's married, but they live very close by. They're within 10 minutes of mm-hmm. us. And then I have a son that's 1 year older than that daughter, and he is at the U, and I have two other daughters at the U, and they are actually living with me at this time. One is married. She was married last May, and she and her husband are living with us, and then my other daughter. And so it's really interesting to be, we kind of had gotten to that point where we had one child at home and it was kind of lonely. And then all of a sudden everybody's coming back and it's a party all the time.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah,
that's
it's so fun.
Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah.
So your husband went to medical school.
Yes, at the University of Utah.
Okay, at the mm-hmm. U, and then did residency in Tucson and yeah. and then in Sacramento.
Yes.
What type of medicine does he practice?
So he's a trauma surgeon, and so he works in critical care and mm-hmm. trauma. And so it was an extensive process. We were in school for a long, yeah. long time. But it's always been his passion, and mm-hmm. he's very good at it. Yeah. Yeah. He really is. He's got just a very, which comes into play with our story, but he's got a very mild temperament and even keel personality where he just kind of takes things as they come. And
yeah, you'd have to as a mm-hmm. trauma doctor.
Yes, yes. So.
Yeah. Okay. So we want to get mm-hmm. into your story. For those of our listeners that don't know Heather's story, we want to talk about this. I wanted to give the background because I wanted people to understand where you've come from mm-hmm. to maybe understand where you are now. So let's talk about this story that really has become just something I think a lot of people have been inspired by. And so let's maybe start from the beginning, wherever the beginning is for you.
Okay. I'll start. It was the 20th of December of last year. So 5 days before Christmas and coming up on the anniversary, you know, it's been fresh on our minds. I was going down to Costco. My husband was in surgery, and the plan was for him to go to Costco when he finished. But as I saw the day ticking on, I thought, oh, I better run down and go, and so that he can just come home after work. And so we had had a birthday party for my daughter the night before, and we had a lot of food left over. So I decided to have my son, my 14-year-old son's friends come over, give their parents a break, and do a pizza party. So I was just going to run down and pick up some things from Costco. I pulled into the parking lot, and it was busy. It was really
December 20th. Yeah. It's crazy time.
Yeah, right around 4:30 p.m. And just it was bustling. And so I had left my husband a message, but he had called me back and said he was out of surgery. But I was telling him, don't worry about going over. I was there, or I was going to pick it up. And I, as I was walking in, I was talking to him. And then there were some cars lined up to go out of the parking lot. And one of the cars that I would have been walking through, he kind of waved me through, so I knew it was safe to go through. And I always wish that I had the visual. My husband made a visual, because we've spoken to some high school students and some other people, and it's hard to imagine what really happened. Mm-hmm. But the best I can explain it is a car was backing up. And he was quite far from where I even was. It wasn't like he was backing up and I was behind him, and that wasn't the case. I was walking through. This car was backing up from another part of the parking lot, and he was going quite fast. They estimate about 30 miles an hour, and he came around. I could hear him coming. People were kind of screaming, and he ended up hitting the car that was in front of the one I was walking in front of. And then he bounced off that car and hit me into another car. Mm-hmm. And then he bounced up onto a snowbank. So there was quite a bit of traction there. And immediately I fell to the ground. And I was just lying there in the parking lot. I was awake the whole time throughout the whole incident. And as I was lying there, people came to my aid. One woman that has just become a dear, dear friend named Terry held my hand the entire time, and we've just become so close ever since. And then there were quite a few other bystanders that helped. There was a Costco employee that picked up my phone and spoke with my husband. And at that point, he was on the 11th floor of the hospital, and he had heard me scream, like a startled scream. And then and these are kind of his words. I've heard him tell it enough times. And then he heard metal colliding, and then nothing. And then so it was such a blessing that somebody picked up the phone and talked to him, and he directed my husband. He said, we're down in the parking lot. I assume this is your wife. She's been hit. And my husband looked out the window, couldn't see anything, so he headed down the stairs, ran down the stairs, and ran across the parking lot.
I just wanted to stop. I'm trying to make sure people understand the visual, is that your husband knows that if you know where this is, which I do, because I go there quite often to Costco, but it's the hospital, the IHC hospital right there in Murray, right? Murray.
Correct.
Hospital.
Good point. Yes.
That's right next to the Costco.
Yes.
So he knew right where you were, and you were close.
Yes. Oh, I mean, we within walking distance, and that they call that the Costco, the hospital Costco.
Yes.
Because it's everyone knows it's right there. And so it was just, he just had to go across the parking lot. And at that point he did see lights. And when he got there, he jumped into the ambulance, had just reached there, and he jumped into the ambulance, and he asked if I was doing okay, and I didn't respond. I heard him, but I didn't respond. And then I told him I needed some pain medicine. And at that point, the person in the ambulance said to my husband, Dr. Van Boerm, we have your wife's limbs. And that was when he understood that what had happened. And he looked down and he saw two tourniquets on my thighs. And I have to just then say that there were some bystanders in the parking lot who had made tourniquets out of what they had. And they were instructed by the Murray Fire Department. And these are all just people, heroes, just heroes.
Wow. We're going to continue your story when we come right back.
Okay.
So we're back here with Heather Van Boerm, and she is telling her story about what happened to her in the Costco parking lot 1 year ago. You were in the hospital, or you were in the ambulance. Your husband's running down. He gets in the ambulance with you.
Yes.
Tourniquets were put on by bystanders.
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy. I mean, I hope that I would have enough wherewithal to do that. But I think we all have to look around and say, you know, thank goodness for the angels around us.
Yes.
But let's pick it up from there. So you're in the ambulance, and then what?
Yes. So we get over to the hospital. I mean, it's not even a 5 minute drive over there. And we get into the hospital, and they are announcing me and saying, this is a such and such woman, and my injuries. And then my husband said, this is my wife. Let's get going. And they take me straight to surgery. Now, they could not immediately give me pain medicine because my blood pressure was so low. Mm. I had lost about 2/3 of my blood, which is really dangerous. And that's, again, those tourniquets they put on were so vital. The fact that they put those on right, which is really quite a miracle that they were able to do that. And that we were so close to the hospital really saved my life. But so they wheeled me in. And then once they got me stable, my blood pressure, they went into surgery at that point.
So you said that they told your husband that there were your limbs. So tell us a little bit about what exactly, what shape you were in.
Yes, yes. So my right leg, the leg had been severed immediately. So just below the knee somewhat, my foot and my tibia were gone, and it was quite a clean cut. So that immediately was severed. And then actually the left leg was much more damaged than the right. Mm-hmm. And it, the tibia was crushed. The whole leg was crushed. The foot was turned. It was quite a disturbing mess. And so, as my husband put it, I know there were a few orthopedic plastic surgeries, surgeons in there. There were like 6 doctors in there operating on me, couple of vascular surgeons. My artery was cut, and so there was no blood flow to the leg. So at that point, they were just trying to put that left leg kind of back together and see what was going to happen. And so they put that back together. It was kind of in, my husband describes it as like a tinker toy type mechanism that held that leg all together. And then there was a plate in there, and they had moved an artery over from the right leg to try and see if they could save that leg.
And then, so your husband's in there. Is he allowed to be in surgery? How is he?
Yeah.
I mean, he does this, you know, and he is even killed, but this has got to be really different.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, that's got to be something that, I mean, no human
should have to see. It's quite unimaginable. And I think about him a lot because he had to take on these roles, a role of husband, wanting to be a doctor to say, because he's very good at what he does,
yes.
You know. But and his partner, partner was there, and then he knew the other surgeons. He felt very confident in them, but he also didn't want to make them nervous. And he realized, you know, the potential of that by hovering around. And so for all the surgeries that I was a part of, he really tried to be in there with me, but then kind of leave and leave it to the doctors. And so that's kind of what he did at that point.
So, okay. So you get out of surgery.
Yes.
And you sort of have one leg that's kind of put back together.
Yeah. And it's there, and you know, the toenails are painted red for Christmas, and I'm thinking, okay. And I come to, I'm surrounded by family, and it's just kind of coming out. I'm just so grateful to be alive and realizing what a blessing that is. And then as I start orienting and realizing, you know, the circumstances, it was a very peaceful time again, right before Christmas. And, we were all there, you know, nobody was in school, nobody had things to do. And so we just kind of were there together. And so as we discussed everything and we were realizing that left leg was quite damaged, then the conversation started that maybe we were not going to be able to keep that left leg.
So what was that like? What was it like? First of all, physically, I'm sure there was still so much pain. And what was it like emotionally to figure out and sort of make that decision?
Yeah. So the pain, that was really interesting. The doctors and the nurses and the techs, everyone did such a good job to try to keep me comfortable. But I really liked their process of wanting to keep me comfortable, but also not wanting me to be completely out of it, to make decisions, and completely wanted me to be there with my kids. So when we realized that decision needed to be made, we started a lot of conversation. I met with quite a few doctors and talked to them about it. And, you know, everyone seemed to have a different opinion. And when we brought my family in and the five kids, and they're in two spouses at that point, and my husband, everybody had different opinions. So it was kind of split down the middle, actually. And it was kind of the medical minds were thinking, I think we need to amputate. And the other minds were thinking, oh, no, Mom, let's keep your leg and see what happens. And at that point, one of the darling nurses, which I just can't mention enough, they were all amazing. All of them were darling and amazing in every wonderful word I could think of. But one of them said to me, I have a friend that is working upstairs right now, and she had her leg amputated, kind of a similar situation. She had been in an accident in England. She had decided to keep her leg, and she I'm sure she would love to talk to you. So they called her down, and she came into the room and sat down next to me and told me her story, that she had been hit by a bullet bike in England. She was out running, and she was a marathon runner. And the bullet bike hit her at 100 miles per hour, so her leg was quite damaged. Well, she decided to keep her leg, and she ended up keeping it for about 2 years. She told me she had just gone into a deep depression, was very unhappy, and then she decided to amputate it 2 years later. And then she was able to run marathons. She started working, and it changed her life. And to me, it wasn't as much that our stories were really similar as that was an answer to what I needed to hear at the time. And it just meant it made sense to me. And it just really became clear to me that that was the right decision. Mm-hmm. And so we spent that night knowing the next day that we were going to go down to have that leg amputated.
So you hadn't even been out of the hospital. This was during those days after.
Yes, that was just 3 days after the accident. And I was still in the ICU. And, you know, again, it was before Christmas. We had a very dear experiences where a music group that we love, the Lower Lights, came and they sang. But again, it was a very peaceful time. It wasn't, never felt frantic. It never felt overly emotional. It felt like we were just handling it as it came, but all together. And so it really, it sounds like it would be just, I don't know what people would think. And often people say that's such a horrible time to have that happen. But really, it was a very peaceful time for us. And people were just so giving. I had the nurses and some of the techs and some of the other people decorated the room. They brought food for my family, which I mean, it was just so giving. These people who had to work these shifts.
Yeah.
And so it was just amazing how we were touched. Mm.
So you make the decision and then immediately you go in for surgery?
Yes. The next morning they took me in and I went down for surgery. I believe that surgery was about, I want to say that one was seven. It might have been 13 hours. I'll get the next two mixed up, but one of them was seven, one was 13. But we went down. They kind of did everything they could, and they couldn't cover all of the leg. They tried to repair, and so we knew down the road there was going to be a skin graft, but it was kind of left open. Mm. It was a lot. They did a lot, and we had just come back up to the room, and they and I think we were there maybe like an hour. Oh, yeah, that was the 13-hour because I think it was about 1 in the morning. And my husband and the nurse on duty noticed that the leg was not working and that there was no blood flowing down to the lower leg, which it was a big, big deal because it meant the difference between a below-the-knee amputation and above-the-knee, which below-the-knee, that's hard enough, but above the knee is a lot more work and it's a lot harder to do everything that you're trying to do. So that, they had a lot of vested interest in trying to keep that artery working and get that blood flow. So I went, found out I needed to go right back down. I felt completely spent. I didn't know how I was going to go through that next surgery. But again, I did a lot of praying and, we headed back down to surgery.
Wow. So two almost right in a row.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So after the second surgery, you come out and what happens?
So we come out of that surgery and it's looking better. Things are looking better. You know, things can still kind of be touch and go, but they had made way with the artery and it seemed to be working. They had and I'm going to forget the tech name of it, but it was like an ultrasound where they would hear the artery working and the blood flowing. And it's kind of like when you're pregnant and you hear that heartbeat of the baby. It was like that. And I remember it was very painful for them to do it. But every time we heard that heart, that blood pumping, it was just the best sound in the world. And we just kind of lived that for the next few days, kind of hoping that this was working. We did. There were quite a few more surgeries. I think we had 10 in all at that point or during that time. But they just kept having to make little changes and making things better and cleaning things up.
Mm. Wow, that's amazing. Okay, I want to hear how you're doing now and some of the things that are going on and some of the trials that have come since. And we'll do that when we come right back. We're back here with Heather Van Buren. She is telling just such a powerful story. I know that sometimes when really hard and difficult and unbelievable things happen, miracles usually follow. And it sounds like that's been the case. Let's talk a little bit about what recovery looked like. what it is to be a part of the amputee community, and you know what it looks like now a year removed.
Okay. I'm going to start with the recovery, just telling a really quick story. On Christmas Eve, my oldest son, that's 28, came to me and asked me if he could take the man that hit me a gift and write him a letter. And my son's very quiet and he's a very thoughtful person, but he ended up writing the man a letter of forgiveness and just wanted to let the man know that he should move on and know that we're going to be okay. And he took him a gift and he just put it on his porch. And I bring that up because along with all the other kids and everything that they did, the Instagram that my daughter Annika's put together and the everything that my other two daughters have done and my cute 14-year-old, they've all pulled together. And because of these little acts of wanting to move forward, recovery has been a lot easier than people would imagine. We let go of any anger or any bad feelings we could have had, and that allowed us to move forward. We pulled together. We're a very spiritual family, and we used our belief to pull together. And then physically, for lack of a better term, we busted it. We decided we were going to. When you were talking about wanting to learn sports and being good at sports, that's what I said to my doctor and my physical therapist. I'm going to treat this as a sport, and I want to know everything about it, and I want to be really good at it. And that's what we kind of did. And we started working right off the bat at getting strong, eating really healthy and well. And so we kind of did this as a family, really. And there was that aspect of it. We would kind of work out and everybody pitched in. We cooked together. We ate together a lot, more than most families do. And then there was also the aspect that we wanted to give back. And when people would ask, what can we do for your family? There came a time where we couldn't take any more food in our fridge. We couldn't use any more anything. So my husband said, please give blood. And so my daughter and the other kids put together blood drives, and they started running blood drives, and were able to bring in a lot of blood, which our hospitals are always in need of blood. And then we started doing a fundraiser for Wasatch Adaptive Sports. And so as we started to give back, it helped us to keep moving forward and to grow. And then we decided, you know, that we wanted to become a major part of this community, the amputee community. And I will be honest, at first I was a little hesitant. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know anyone. I'd never known anyone who had anything amputated. And I was not ready to embrace it. And then I became immersed in it. And I really owe that to my daughter and my kids as well, because they embraced it. And as I started going to the activities that they provide, and they would teach me how to walk and then run and then climb and then ride bikes. And I'm going to learn to ski pretty soon. And it's like this community. Everybody's pulling for each other, and everybody is so positive. And I really am loving being a part of that community. And I've really embraced it and just found the most wonderful salt of the earth people. So healing, it's come quite a long ways, and we've had great experiences. Our family did a 60-mile ride up in Park City this summer.
Wow.
So fun. Really tested my limits and some of theirs, and it was great. Wow. It was really great. And we've just had a lot of fun. And then, you know, as I said, the anniversary is coming up, and we're going to go to the beach and just be a family during that time. And I can't wait. I've already passed it off with my prosthetist that I'm going to get in the ocean, which is one of my favorite places to be. And who knows, maybe surf. I don't know. But we'll try whatever.
No doubt that you will do it.
Yeah. So it's really coming along.
That's amazing. I want to go back to something you talked about at the beginning with your son and forgiveness. I recently read an article. It was the New York Times. It was an opinion article about forgiveness and how our country is struggling, and the antidote to that, what ails us, is forgiveness. Do you believe that? And clearly you've felt that. Do you, you felt the healing within yourselves. What is it about forgiveness that heals the forgiver?
Yeah, I think forgiveness is such a great form of, I kind of explain it like this. It really takes the negative out of your body. It relieves you of that, carrying something that is so hard and burdensome to carry and heavy, that you can let go and feel this weightless feeling once you've let something like that go. And I kind of team it with serving, because as soon as you can let go of your problems and just realize that everybody is going through something, like you say, as a country, you could not find one person who isn't going through something hard. Really, the minute we kind of look outside of our front door, or, you know, away from our nose, we see others. And then the minute we start to serve others, we really forget our own needs, and we start finding joy in doing for others and forget ourselves. And I love that at this time of year, we're really focused on that. I have been so impressed by and quite inundated by these pleads for food and clothing and toys for kids and to help families right now. And I think it's wonderful. I think it is wonderful, because we're realizing we're a community and we just all need to be there for each other and help each other. And then we can all be a little happier.
Yeah. So your son sort of started that forgiveness journey. I know in my own experience, I think some people are a little, like you said, he's thoughtful. That maybe was just something that he thought of right off the bat. Was it harder for some than others in the family? I just know that some people, it's like a personality trait that's maybe easier for other people, you know, some people than others. You know, I think some of us enjoy our grudges. Some of us like hold on to that like a dirty blanket. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, it's comfortable if we're mad. There had to have been some difficulty in the forgiveness, or maybe not.
Yes.
Maybe
no,
not for your family.
No,
I don't know.
For sure. We had some kids that weren't all for that idea, because they did talk about it. However, they were fine allowing it to happen, but they said, I'm not there yet. Mm. And we said, that's great. That's totally fine, because, it, like you said, it's a blanket, and pain is pain. Everybody, people say to me, I can't complain to you about this, because look at you. Pain is pain. And if you feel that, you're in pain and you can't just dismiss it. And I don't want to sound like we are just angelic and it was just, you know, everything's just easy and we just let go of it. I always say to those of you who are older, the Pollyanna theory. I am no Pollyanna. That was just a girl who always saw everything as perfect and pleasant and happy. But I do think a lot of people want to hold on to it, because it almost, they can't understand the injustice and believe that something so horrible or somebody could say something so wrong or do something so wrong. But I think the fact of the matter is, most people aren't out to hurt people, and most people aren't trying to say the wrong thing. Most people are just doing the best they can. And really, my husband's a really good example of this, but you know, you can assume that people mean the worst or trying to do the worst, and you're just always, you're always going to feel bad. Or you can assume they're trying to do the best they can and mean the best they can, and that takes it away from you and puts it on what they do with it. And I think that's really powerful. Is I can't say what the person who hit me, what they were doing, how it happened, how they reacted to it, how they felt about it. But I could leave that to them by just saying it's up to them. It's not up to me. All I can control is how I'm going to feel about it. And sometimes it does take a little longer. You know, you can be angry about something. And surprisingly, it can take a little while to get over. But the sooner you do, just the better you feel. Mm,
for sure. Talk just maybe briefly about the mental health journey. There had to have been some real battles to stay positive, to reevaluate what your life looks like going forward. And I don't know, maybe you didn't, but it feels like, I think, you know, putting myself in your position, it feels like there might have been some struggles for me to be positive, to not wallow in it a little bit. How was it with your mental health? And, you know, just even trying to figure out, what does my life look like now? There's got to be some mourning of your previous abilities and looking forward to, you know, figuring out a new normal.
Yeah. And the mental health, and again, I have to applaud Intermountain Healthcare, because they had sent someone into my room when I got up to rehab. And again, everybody was so wonderful up there and so helpful, but they actually sent people in to make sure I was mentally doing okay and to teach me things, ways to cope. There were wonderful strategies, but one thing that really impacted me was a man came in, and Dr. Jasper, I'm just going to shout out to him, but he brought in a book. I was reading a book when he came in, and he said, how about I read your book and you read a book that I'm going to suggest? And we swapped the names of our books. And he suggested a book called The Book of Joy. And it was interviews with the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu. And
I've read it. It's wonderful.
Isn't it wonderful?
It's a fantastic book.
I mean, I can only say that it changed my life. And I've kind of been this advocate for this book, because I laid in rehab every night listening to this book, because he told me I had to listen to it so I could hear their
accent. Yes,
because
you do the, it's interview style is the book. Yeah,
and it's their voices.
Yes.
But if you really hear these men talking, and I believe they are just so guided, but they're really telling us that we can move forward and we can find joy in any circumstances we're in, any circumstances. So from that point, I can honestly say we have not really struggled. I made my husband get checked out before. I said, I won't leave the hospital till you get checked out for PTSD. and Dr. Jasper met with him, and we made sure we were mentally healthy before we left the hospital. And because that was important to me. And since then, I've read the book probably two more times. Mm-hmm. But other than that, we haven't had a lot of mental struggle. But when we do, we'll check in, I think. And mm-hmm. I think that's important, too. And to be upfront and honest about it. And I think so often right now, people find being honest about mental health shameful. And there's nothing to feel shame about. We all go through times when we feel a little darker or unhappier. And I'm happy to say we haven't had many of those times, but if we do, we'll definitely check in. Yeah.
That's amazing. And great thoughts too about, you know, making sure that if you do, you know, get help. And I think things are turning a corner in that sort of shame area. I think, at least when I talk to youth, and there's so many, I just saw new statistics about adolescents and mental health, and some really disturbing statistics. And I just think we're we're beyond the place where that's, I hope, like I'm, you know, putting this out to the universe that we're, we're past that. We need to just help each other and make sure that everybody's okay. So I love that idea.
Yeah.
I do want to just talk about you had your first grandbaby.
Thrilling.
So talk a little bit about what that's been like and you know, what kind of grandma are you going to be?
I'm going to be the best grandma that ever was. Yes, I'll just tell the story. So Greta was my little grandbaby, was born on the 28th of December. So 8 days after the accident happened.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. And wow. She was supposed to be delivered at another hospital, but they there were some strings pulled and she was delivered at the hospital, and I remember they braided all the tubes and everything coming out of me, and they put me on a gurney and they took me down to see this baby born, and I was so thrilled. And I'll just tell this story because everyone seems to love it, but my daughter, and again, I was a little hopped up on medication, as my husband says, but my daughter says, "Mom, we would like to name her Greta Heather after you." And I said, "Oh, honey, I am so honored." And she said, without missing a beat, she said, "Oh, well, she'll have really big shoes to fill." And then she had this horrified look on her face. We have video of it. But there again, we've learned that having a sense of humor through this is a big deal. But that granddaughter has just saved me. I just adore her. Being a grandparent is so much more fun than being a parent. And
I've heard.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And I spent a lot of time with her. And I really do find every moment precious, whether we're just sitting on the ground playing or whether I'm teaching her how to drink out of a straw. I'm just so grateful to be here. And she has just brought this light into our world and our family together. So
another beautiful miracle.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, Heather, this has been just really inspirational for me, and I know for our listeners. And thank you again for sharing your story. And thank you to your family. Your daughters are amazing. Your family's amazing. And we look up to you so much and are completely inspired by you. So thank you again for sharing your story here today.
Well, thank you. And I just wanted to say I appreciate you having me on. And I'm just so amazed at everything you're doing. I really love your platform. And so thank you. This is an honor.
Thanks, Heather. You can find Heather and her family and her stories on Instagram at VB_flower_power. And check out the books we talked about as well. Thanks for being a friend.